This is the Pearson EdExcel International GCSE English as a Second Language Paper 2 Listening Test, Summer 2024. This test is in four parts, and you will have to answer questions on what you hear. At the end of each extract, there will be a pause to give you time to read the questions. You will hear all four parts twice. Write your answers in the spaces in your question booklet as you listen. Part 1. Section A. In this section, you will hear five short extracts in which people are describing important inventions. Read the list of inventions below, then listen to the extracts. For questions 1 to 5, identify which invention, A to H, is being described by each speaker by marking a cross for the correct answer. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark your new answer with a cross. Not all the inventions are described, and each may be used more than once. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions. Speaker 1.
Since it was invented about 40 years ago by an electrical engineer and a computer pioneer, the entire world has become totally dependent on this form of communication. With just one click of a button on their computer, people from across the world can connect with each other, as well as being able to access information.
Speaker 2.
This form of road transport was first designed in Germany, but the most popular model was produced in America at the beginning of the 20th century. It increased the ease of everyday travel for people wanting to commute to work or even travel for pleasure. Although it has been blamed for pollution, greener models are now being designed and produced.
Speaker 3.
The inventor was only 21 when he thought of this idea. Life would be very different without this invention. Thanks to the large number of channels available, it remains a popular source of entertainment for many families in their own homes. It has helped educate the world and was the main source of information before computers were invented.
Speaker 4. It was in the early years of the 20th century that humankind literally reached and touched the sky when flight was invented. This invention has made the world seem smaller. It has contributed to an increase in trade as well as travel for both business and pleasure. It would be right to say that the entire world has been changed with the Wright brothers' invention. Speaker 5.
Originally, this form of energy was discovered hundreds of years ago, but no one really knew how to use it. At the beginning of the 20th century, scientists invented and improved ways of transmitting this energy. It has replaced coal and oil-generated power. Nearly all inventions used today would be useless were it not for this form of energy.
Now, listen a second time and check your answers. Speaker 1.
Since it was invented about 40 years ago by an electrical engineer and a computer pioneer, the entire world has become totally dependent on this form of communication. With just one click of a button on their computer, people from across the world can connect with each other, as well as being able to access information.
Speaker 2.
This form of road transport was first designed in Germany, but the most popular model was produced in America at the beginning of the 20th century. It increased the ease of everyday travel for people wanting to commute to work or even travel for pleasure. Although it has been blamed for pollution, greener models are now being designed and produced.
Speaker 3.
The inventor was only 21 when he thought of this idea. Life would be very different without this invention. Thanks to the large number of channels available, it remains a popular source of entertainment for many families in their own homes. It has helped educate the world and was the main source of information before computers were invented.
Speaker 4. It was in the early years of the 20th century that humankind literally reached and touched the sky when flight was invented. This invention has made the world seem smaller. It has contributed to an increase in trade, as well as travel for both business and pleasure. It would be right to say that the entire world has been changed with the Wright brothers' invention. Speaker 5.
Originally, this form of energy was discovered hundreds of years ago, but no one really knew how to use it. At the beginning of the 20th century, scientists invented and improved ways of transmitting this energy. It has replaced coal and oil-generated power. Nearly all inventions used today would be useless were it not for this form of energy.
That's the end of Part 1, Section A. Now turn to Part 1, Section B. Section B. In this section, you will hear a person talking about contactless bank cards. For questions 6 to 10, listen and answer the questions below. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. 1 mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Welcome to our monthly financial advice program. Today, I'm going to ask my listeners a very important question about contactless bank cards. Do you already use contactless payment methods? If you do, then there are things worth considering when using your card. However, let's start at the beginning. About 70 years ago, the residents of a small town in California received their very first credit card in the post. The letter that came with a little cardboard card told them they could buy various goods on credit and did not have to pay for them immediately. A few years later, one of the bigger American banks issued a plastic card to their customers. The bank card, as we know it, was invented. Over the years, the card has evolved into its present form of contactless. A special electronic chip in the card holds your bank account details. You don't have to enter any form of identification or PIN into the payment device. Just tap the card to pay for whatever you have bought. Contactless cards have brought speed and convenience to your shopping. However, the ease of using this technology does not come without risk to your security and to your finances. The most obvious advice is always to know where your credit card is and to look after it carefully to prevent it getting lost. The danger of someone else being able to take your card and make contactless payments is a very real one. It is easy to lose track of what you have spent. Research has shown that people are more likely to overspend using contactless payments. If you know that you do not have much money in your bank account, consider leaving your contactless card at home and withdraw cash from a machine. Using cash is a more conscious action and is a better way to judge your spending. A little planning removes the risk of nasty surprises when you look at your next bank statement.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Welcome to our monthly financial advice program. Today, I'm going to ask my listeners a very important question about contactless bank cards. Do you already use contactless payment methods? If you do, then there are things worth considering when using your card. However, let's start at the beginning. About 70 years ago, the residents of a small town in California received their very first credit card in the post. The letter that came with a little cardboard card told them they could buy various goods on credit and did not have to pay for them immediately. A few years later, one of the bigger American banks issued a plastic card to their customers. The bank card, as we know it, was invented. Over the years, the card has evolved into its present form of contactless. A special electronic chip in the card holds your bank account details. You don't have to enter any form of identification or PIN into the payment device. Just tap the card to pay for whatever you have bought. Contactless cards have brought speed and convenience to your shopping. However, the ease of using this technology does not come without risk to your security and to your finances. The most obvious advice is always to know where your credit card is and to look after it carefully to prevent it getting lost. The danger of someone else being able to take your card and make contactless payments is a very real one. It is easy to lose track of what you have spent. Research has shown that people are more likely to overspend using contactless payments. If you know that you do not have much money in your bank account, consider leaving your contactless card at home and withdraw cash from a machine. Using cash is a more conscious action and is a better way to judge your spending. A little planning removes the risk of nasty surprises when you look at your next bank statement.
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two. Part two. In this part, you will hear a person talking about sustainable food choices. For questions 11 to 18, listen and complete the notes. Write no more than three words for each answer. Questions 19 and 20 must be answered with a cross in a box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark your new answer with a cross. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Hi, I'm Anna Zermond. I'm a second year student of geography at the University of Sheffield in England, and I've been asked to complete a project looking at students' attitudes towards buying environmentally friendly food and to see if there are any possibilities for changing towards a more sustainable diet. University students tend to be environmentally conscious. Most of us don't drive much. We represent a high proportion of vegetarian and vegans, and we're more likely than any other population group to take part in green activism, protests, and voting. We're doing our bit for the environment. However, this does not always mean that we make the right buying choices. In my final year at university, I would like to investigate how many students in my faculty base their food shopping on environmental factors, such as being organic and local, especially when it comes to their fruit and vegetables. Furthermore, I would like to find out about student purchasing habits, to ask what could persuade them to make greener choices. Everybody knows that organic food is more expensive, whereas the price of standard non-organic food is kept artificially low, so it is easier to opt for something cheaper. However, this answer is too simple. While we know that students have limited funds, is the cost of food the only reason for our buying choices? In general, here in the United Kingdom, the population, and that includes us students, spends far less money and a far lower proportion of our income on food compared to other European countries. So, perhaps it is a matter of priorities. Students have very busy social lives, as well as having plenty of hobbies. These are expensive activities that require a lot of money. For me, I can be strangely happy spending £20 going to clubs with my friends, or buying a takeaway meal that will cost me at least £10. Yet, I will think very carefully about spending 30 pence more on a few organic tomatoes. For others, I'm sure it's a case of convenience and lack of time. It might mean having to read the product label to check whether it is organic, or perhaps going elsewhere for your organic fruit and vegetables, as the nearest shop to you does not stock them. As students, we lead busy lives, and often have to supplement our income with various jobs that are not a routine 9-till-5, which go on well into the evening. We therefore lack the time to shop around for organic food. We also differ from the rest of the adult population in that we're buying food just for ourselves, whereas many buy organic fruit and vegetables, as well as meat, thinking of the quality of food for their families or partners. Trying to understand student reasoning is the key to any change in this situation. This could be achieved by introducing strategies to inform students, which would encourage us to buy and eat organic food. There is plenty of scope for us, as an untested group of consumers. Crucially, all ideas and solutions must come from us students, although universities could do more to support us in our food choices. Not only should universities themselves be more involved, but there could be more direct engagement between organic food producers and sellers and student organisations. However, before we can argue for better and easier ways of buying organic food, we students must be targeted as a consumer group by all concerned. This creates an opportunity to reach a large market of people and, importantly, a group of young people for whom this could influence food choices for life, as well as those for future generations.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Hi, I'm Anna Zermond. I'm a second year student of geography at the University of Sheffield in England, and I've been asked to complete a project looking at students' attitudes towards buying environmentally friendly food and to see if there are any possibilities for changing towards a more sustainable diet. University students tend to be environmentally conscious. Most of us don't drive much. We represent a high proportion of vegetarian and vegans, and we're more likely than any other population group to take part in green activism, protests, and voting. We're doing our bit for the environment. However, this does not always mean that we make the right buying choices. In my final year at university, I would like to investigate how many students in my faculty base their food shopping on environmental factors, such as being organic and local, especially when it comes to their fruit and vegetables. Furthermore, I would like to find out about student purchasing habits, to ask what could persuade them to make greener choices. Everybody knows that organic food is more expensive, whereas the price of standard non-organic food is kept artificially low, so it is easier to opt for something cheaper. However, this answer is too simple. While we know that students have limited funds, is the cost of food the only reason for our buying choices? In general, here in the United Kingdom, the population, and that includes us students, spends far less money and a far lower proportion of our income on food compared to other European countries. So, perhaps it is a matter of priorities. Students have very busy social lives, as well as having plenty of hobbies. These are expensive activities that require a lot of money. For me, I can be strangely happy spending £20 going to clubs with my friends, or buying a takeaway meal that will cost me at least £10. Yet, I will think very carefully about spending 30 pence more on a few organic tomatoes. For others, I'm sure it's a case of convenience and lack of time. It might mean having to read the product label to check whether it is organic, or perhaps going elsewhere for your organic fruit and vegetables, as the nearest shop to you does not stock them. As students, we lead busy lives, and often have to supplement our income with various jobs that are not a routine 9-till-5, which go on well into the evening. We therefore lack the time to shop around for organic food. We also differ from the rest of the adult population in that we're buying food just for ourselves, whereas many buy organic fruit and vegetables, as well as meat, thinking of the quality of food for their families or partners. Trying to understand student reasoning is the key to any change in this situation. This could be achieved by introducing strategies to inform students, which would encourage us to buy and eat organic food. There is plenty of scope for us, as an untested group of consumers. Crucially, all ideas and solutions must come from us students, although universities could do more to support us in our food choices. Not only should universities themselves be more involved, but there could be more direct engagement between organic food producers and sellers and student organisations. However, before we can argue for better and easier ways of buying organic food, we students must be targeted as a consumer group by all concerned. This creates an opportunity to reach a large market of people and, importantly, a group of young people for whom this could influence food choices for life, as well as those for future generations.
That's the end of part two. Now turn to part three. Part three. In this part, you will hear an interview with a young performer. For questions 21 to 25, listen and answer the questions. You do not need to write in full sentences. Questions 26 to 30 must be answered with a cross in a box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark your new answer with a cross. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions. Hello, I'm Lindsay Winston, and it's my pleasure to welcome all our listeners to our monthly programme, Young and Gifted. Today we shall be interviewing a young man who has, at the age of 22, made a name for himself in the field of classical music, playing the cello. Those of you who are not familiar with this instrument, it is like a large violin. Sheku Kanimason became famous when he won the 2016 Young Musician of the Year Award. Not only was he just 16, but also the first black musician to win this prestigious award since the launch of the competition. He became a household name after being invited to play at the wedding of the Duke and Duchess of Sussex in 2018. He was watched by billions of viewers around the world. Not only is he a musician, but also an ambassador for two charities helping young people. And in 2020, he was in the Queen's New Year's Honours List for his services to music. What an achievement! Let's welcome a young and talented performer, Sheku Kanimason.
Thank you for asking me to come and talk to you. I'm not sure about being a household name. It all sounds very grand. As for being called talented, well, I think the word is sometimes overused. I'm convinced that if you're introduced to music early enough and work hard at it, every child could do it. There has to be naturally a level of skill, and after that, it's about working hard and reaching out for any opportunities to perform. My brothers, sisters and I went for every single talent competition available to us, both in our hometown and on national TV.
Wow, ambitious and hardworking. Tell us a little about yourself. I think most of our listeners know that you come from a large, close family. There are seven of you siblings, aged from 12 to 25, and you're all professional musicians.
Yeah, well, here goes. We were raised in Nottingham, in England, by Dad, Stuart, and Mum, Kadiatu. Dad, whose parents came from Antigua, is a business executive working for an international eco-tourist travel company. Mum was born in Sierra Leone, but moved to Wales when she was young. She became a university lecturer in English. Both Mum and Dad, when they were young, played musical instruments to a very high standard, but never took that up professionally.
Apart from music, what else do you enjoy doing together? Do you have a favourite holiday or celebration, like a birthday or Christmas?
Well, five of us have now left home, either to study music or to start professional performing careers. But, without fail, we always make a point of being together at Christmas. It's a very special time for us. We can forget about the outside world and all the stress that goes with learning and performing.
I've heard that this is the one time of the year that your instruments don't get played, because there's a total family ban on practicing from Christmas Eve to Boxing Day. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. The music is on the stereo, and it's all non-stop. We start with traditional festive music, and then we move to reggae. We sing along. Mum loves singing, and she'll sing anything. Gospel, pop, classical carols. She says it comes from her childhood in Wales when she sang in a choir. But to tell you the truth, I think our overall favourite is Bob Marley, who we listen to while cooking.
Wow, that's really fascinating, cooking to Bob Marley. So what's your Christmas dinner like? And how do you spend the day?
Well, our dinner is a truly international affair. Of course, we have the traditional English turkey and trimmings, but also food representing both Mum's Sierra Leone and Dad's Antiguan heritages. We all help with the cooking, apart from Dad, who is banned from the kitchen.
It must all be great fun. I can imagine what it's like with all the family talking at once. The noise level must be something.
It's noisy, all right. It gets worse when we start to play board games. We are all very competitive. After all, the sole purpose of a board game is to win.
Are you also competitive when it comes to playing music?
Oh, goodness, no. The idea of playing music couldn't be further from the idea of winning. The most important thing is the music itself. It teaches you empathy and how to express and experience emotions. I could say that, in a way, music matures you.
When I was researching for the programme, I spoke to your parents. They told me that although you are by far the most famous and have been honoured by the Queen, there appears to be absolutely no jealousy or rivalry between any of you.
Well, one of my sisters says that it's not like someone's success is your failure. Someone's success is your joy, and you share that. We wouldn't be such a close family without music. It's how we communicate with one another. I can't imagine our house without music.
You clearly inspire each other to keep improving. I think you're an incredible family. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us. Good luck with your career. I'm sure we will be listening to you for many years to come.
I was very happy to share with you how my family spend their time together. Thank you for your good wishes and for having me on the programme.
Now listen a second time and check your answers. Hello, I'm Lindsay Winston, and it's my pleasure to welcome all our listeners to our monthly programme, Young and Gifted. Today we shall be interviewing a young man who has, at the age of 22, made a name for himself in the field of classical music, playing the cello. Those of you who are not familiar with this instrument, it is like a large violin. Sheku Kanimason became famous when he won the 2016 Young Musician of the Year Award. Not only was he just 16, but also the first black musician to win this prestigious award since the launch of the competition. He became a household name after being invited to play at the wedding of the Duke and Duchess of Sussex in 2018. He was watched by billions of viewers around the world. Not only is he a musician, but also an ambassador for two charities helping young people. And in 2020, he was in the Queen's New Year's Honours list for his services to music. What an achievement! Let's welcome a young and talented performer, Sheku Kanimason.
Thank you for asking me to come and talk to you. I'm not sure about being a household name. It all sounds very grand. As for being called talented, well, I think the word is sometimes overused. I'm convinced that if you're introduced to music early enough and work hard at it, every child could do it. There has to be naturally a level of skill, and after that, it's about working hard and reaching out for any opportunities to perform. My brothers, sisters and I went for every single talent competition available to us, both in our hometown and on national TV.
Wow, ambitious and hardworking. Tell us a little about yourself. I think most of our listeners know that you come from a large, close family. There are seven of you siblings, aged from 12 to 25, and you're all professional musicians.
Yeah, well, here goes. We were raised in Nottingham, in England, by Dad, Stuart, and Mum, Kadiatu. Dad, whose parents came from Antigua, is a business executive working for an international eco-tourist travel company. Mum was born in Sierra Leone, but moved to Wales when she was young. She became a university lecturer in English. Both Mum and Dad, when they were young, played musical instruments to a very high standard, but never took that up professionally.
Apart from music, what else do you enjoy doing together? Do you have a favourite holiday or celebration, like a birthday or Christmas?
Well, five of us have now left home, either to study music or to start professional performing careers. But, without fail, we always make a point of being together at Christmas. It's a very special time for us. We can forget about the outside world and all the stress that goes with learning and performing.
I've heard that this is the one time of the year that your instruments don't get played, because there's a total family ban on practicing from Christmas Eve to Boxing Day.
Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. The music is on the stereo, and it's all non-stop. We start with traditional festive music, and then we move to reggae. We sing along. Mum loves singing, and she'll sing anything. Gospel, pop, classical carols. She says it comes from her childhood in Wales when she sang in a choir. But to tell you the truth, I think our overall favourite is Bob Marley, who we listen to while cooking.
Wow, that's really fascinating, cooking to Bob Marley. So what's your Christmas dinner like? And how do you spend the day?
Well, our dinner is a truly international affair. Of course, we have the traditional English turkey and trimmings, but also food representing both Mum's Sierra Leone and Dad's Antiguan heritages. We all help with the cooking, apart from Dad, who is banned from the kitchen.
It must all be great fun. I can imagine what it's like with all the family talking at once. The noise level must be something.
It's noisy, all right. It gets worse when we start to play board games. We are all very competitive. After all, the sole purpose of a board game is to win.
Are you also competitive when it comes to playing music?
Oh, goodness, no. The idea of playing music couldn't be further from the idea of winning. The most important thing is the music itself. It teaches you empathy and how to express and experience emotions. I could say that, in a way, music matures you.
When I was researching for the programme, I spoke to your parents. They told me that although you are by far the most famous and have been honoured by the Queen, there appears to be absolutely no jealousy or rivalry between any of you.
Well, one of my sisters says that it's not like someone's success is your failure. Someone's success is your joy, and you share that. We wouldn't be such a close family without music. It's how we communicate with one another. I can't imagine our house without music.
You clearly inspire each other to keep improving. I think you're an incredible family. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us. Good luck with your career. I'm sure we will be listening to you for many years to come.
I was very happy to share with you how my family spend their time together. Thank you for your good wishes and for having me on the programme.
That's the end of part three. Now, turn to part four. Part four. In this part, you will hear an extract from a podcast about the importance of music in our lives. For questions 31 to 33 and 38 to 40, listen and complete the sentences below. Write no more than three words for each answer. For questions 34 to 37, complete the table. Write no more than three words for each answer. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
I'm Professor Patrick Tullow from the Bristol Heart Institute in the United Kingdom. I shall be looking into the importance of music in our lives. Not only am I a heart specialist, but I also play the violin, and I am director of the Bristol Symphony Orchestra. Medicine and music are not as strange a combination as you might think. Many of my colleagues are not only famous in the field of medicine and science, but they are also very talented musicians, playing a variety of music from classical to jazz and pop. Have you ever wanted to reduce your levels of stress and anxiety, increase your feelings of well-being, and improve your memory? A good fitness routine will do all of that if you want to be active. If you simply want to relax, put on some music. Listening to a beautiful piece of music or an upbeat pop song can trigger all sorts of positive emotions. Music has the incredible power to change our mood from feeling sad to joyful. Scientists suggest that music and different rhythms could even make us healthier. That's not as strange as it sounds. After all, we already possess a natural rhythm. Our heartbeats, breathing, and brain waves all follow a rhythm of their own. Listening to songs and music can influence our body rhythms. Soothing music, for example, can reduce blood pressure and anxiety. For years, I have been conducting research on how my patients improve by using mindfulness-based and stress reduction techniques. This includes a lot of music. My patients showed that, after a session of musical therapy, they all had a much better sense of well-being. Of course, this meant that these people had a reduced need for medical treatment. Some research suggests that it's not just the calming nature of music that affects heart rate, breathing, and blood pressure, but the rhythm itself. One of my colleagues, who is also a very keen musician, believes that a repetitive rhythm encourages the heart and brain to function in time to the rhythm. He found that music with a gentle beat lasting 10 seconds and which is repeated over a period of time can make a person feel less stressed and more positive. According to him, this is because the nerves that go into the heart and brain send impulses that are similar to patterns in music. Some of the most famous and popular pieces of classical music are made up of this repeated 10-second pattern. In a study done about 30 years ago, research found that students listening to music by Mozart performed better in a test than those who worked in silence. This has become known as the Mozart effect, and although it has been debated very strongly since, has not been disproved. Scientists don't fully understand how the brain reacts to music, but on a simple level, hearing music we enjoy triggers chemical processes in the brain. This includes the release of a chemical that is associated with happiness and pleasure. Have you ever experienced a tingling feeling of pleasure down your spine when listening to music? That's all down to the chemicals our brains release. Focusing on music can act as a distraction and help to reduce feelings of anxiety. How does this work? Well, our brains love patterns and working out how to complete them or fill in missing gaps. When we are focusing on music, we tend to be less anxious and forget what has been worrying us. Music plays an important role in our memories. A kind of network of memories becomes active every time we tune into a piece of music that we like or enjoy. If you are enjoying a particularly special moment, think about the music you are hearing or associating with that moment. This helps capture memories that will link you to those good times in the future. To harness music for your day-to-day well-being, it is important you engage in active and mindful listening. First, consider how you are feeling at that particular moment and choose a song or a piece of music that reflects your mood. Let your emotions be your guide. For example, if you need to have a short break before moving on to another task that you don't really like doing, pick something that relaxes you but might also motivate you. By doing this, you can find more energy to get on with the task in hand. Focus on your breathing and listen to different elements at play in that piece of music. Think of the volume and pace of the piece. What instruments can you hear? What are the lyrics, if there are any? Which words or phrases are really standing out for you at that moment? If you find focusing completely on the music challenging, try wearing headphones that will block out any distracting sounds. In preparation for days when you might need some music to help you focus, try creating your own playlist filled with music and songs that are special and personal to you. You can choose music that will calm you down, as well as music that will cheer you up and motivate you to get the job done. It is so easy for us to say that we like to listen to music. Yet too often, it is in the background and a passive experience. Taking a moment to listen actively can be surprisingly powerful.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
I'm Professor Patrick Tullow from the Bristol Heart Institute in the United Kingdom. I shall be looking into the importance of music in our lives. Not only am I a heart specialist, but I also play the violin, and I am director of the Bristol Symphony Orchestra. Medicine and music are not as strange a combination as you might think. Many of my colleagues are not only famous in the field of medicine and science, but they are also very talented musicians, playing a variety of music from classical to jazz and pop. Have you ever wanted to reduce your levels of stress and anxiety, increase your feelings of well-being, and improve your memory? A good fitness routine will do all of that if you want to be active. If you simply want to relax, put on some music. Listening to a beautiful piece of music or an upbeat pop song can trigger all sorts of positive emotions. Music has the incredible power to change our mood from feeling sad to joyful. Scientists suggest that music and different rhythms could even make us healthier. That's not as strange as it sounds. After all, we already possess a natural rhythm. Our heartbeats, breathing, and brain waves all follow a rhythm of their own. Listening to songs and music can influence our body rhythms. Soothing music, for example, can reduce blood pressure and anxiety. For years, I have been conducting research on how my patients improve by using mindfulness-based and stress reduction techniques. This includes a lot of music. My patients showed that after a session of musical therapy, they all had a much better sense of well-being. Of course, this meant that these people had a reduced need for medical treatment. Some research suggests that it's not just the calming nature of music that affects heart rate, breathing, and blood pressure, but the rhythm itself. One of my colleagues, who is also a very keen musician, believes that a repetitive rhythm encourages the heart and brain to function in time to the rhythm. He found that music with a gentle beat lasting 10 seconds and which is repeated over a period of time can make a person feel less stressed and more positive. According to him, this is because the nerves that go into the heart and brain send impulses that are similar to patterns in music. Some of the most famous and popular pieces of classical music are made up of this repeated 10-second pattern. In a study done about 30 years ago, research found that students listening to music by Mozart performed better in a test than those who worked in silence. This has become known as the Mozart effect, and although it has been debated very strongly since, has not been disproved. Scientists don't fully understand how the brain reacts to music, but on a simple level, hearing music we enjoy triggers chemical processes in the brain. This includes the release of a chemical that is associated with happiness and pleasure. Have you ever experienced a tingling feeling of pleasure down your spine when listening to music? That's all down to the chemicals our brains release. Focusing on music can act as a distraction and help to reduce feelings of anxiety. How does this work? Well, our brains love patterns and working out how to complete them or fill in missing gaps. When we are focusing on music, we tend to be less anxious and forget what has been worrying us. Music plays an important role in our memories. A kind of network of memories becomes active every time we tune into a piece of music that we like or enjoy. If you are enjoying a particularly special moment, think about the music you are hearing or associating with that moment. This helps capture memories that will link you to those good times in the future. To harness music for your day-to-day well-being, it is important you engage in active and mindful listening. First, consider how you are feeling at that particular moment and choose a song or a piece of music that reflects your mood. Let your emotions be your guide. For example, if you need to have a short break before moving on to another task that you don't really like doing, pick something that relaxes you but might also motivate you. By doing this, you can find more energy to get on with the task in hand. Focus on your breathing and listen to different elements at play in that piece of music. Think of the volume and pace of the piece. What instruments can you hear? What are the lyrics, if there are any? Which words or phrases are really standing out for you at that moment? If you find focusing completely on the music challenging, try wearing headphones that will block out any distracting sounds. In preparation for days when you might need some music to help you focus, try creating your own playlist filled with music and songs that are special and personal to you. You can choose music that will calm you down, as well as music that will cheer you up and motivate you to get the job done. It is so easy for us to say that we like to listen to music. Yet too often, it is in the background and a passive experience. Taking a moment to listen actively can be surprisingly powerful.
That is the end of the test. Please wait for your question booklet to be collected. Thank you, and good luck.